The Tom Woods Show, episode 571.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody. I don't know about you, but my inbox drives me crazy. I have more emails than I can cope with, and I don't know what to do. And every day I feel worse about it. But SaneBox solved my problem. Check it out for free for 2 weeks through SaneBox.com/Woods. That's SaneBox.com/Woods. Hey, gang, I have some inside information for you, which is that Rocket Languages, which I promote on this show, is having a 60% off sale on Monday, January 18th, starting at 2 p.m. Eastern. 60% off the first 500 courses sold. That usually goes within a couple of hours, so put it on your Google calendar for January 18th, 2 p.m. Eastern time, tomwoods.com/rocket. Welcome to another episode of The Tom Woods Show. It's your favorite of the episodes. It's another one of our post-debate commentaries. And I'll tell you, last night watching this thing, I was thinking to myself, I sure hope the listeners enjoy these episodes as much as they say they do, because this is real work. And joining me, as always, to talk about it is our friend Lou Rockwell, a great benefactor of mine and of the whole human race. Lou, of course, is the publisher of LouRockwell.com, which all the cool libertarians read every day. He's the founder and chairman of the Mises Institute, which you can visit at Mises.org. That's Mises.org. He was chief of staff to Ron Paul. And let me mention, by the way, that coming up this summer, as always, is the Mises University's summer university program called the Mises University. It was a life-changing event for me. And if you are a college student, undergraduate, or graduate who has an interest in the Austrian tradition, I urge you to apply, because it is such an extraordinary experience. Won't cost you a cent except just your transportation to get down there. So check that out at Mises.org/events. Lou, welcome back.
Tom, great to be with you as always.
I don't know if it was just me. I said to you when we started talking this morning, I'm not going to say anything about the debate till we start recording. Was it just me, or was that absolutely excruciating last night?
Oh, it was terrible. I mean, it was boring, and I kept thinking, if I weren't going to be talking with Tom tomorrow, I would long ago have turned this thing off.
I know. Lou, I thought the same thing, but I thought, you know, I've made an implicit pledge to tens of thousands of people. So, all right. Let's talk about Rand, who was not there. I think everybody listening knows that Rand was demoted to the so-called undercard debate, and then he refused to participate in that. He boycotted that. And some people in the media, I was just reading in U.S. News, speculated that this may actually, you know, on balance, if it's measurable, have done him marginally more good than bad, because he did get a lot of press for it. He got onto The Daily Show. He did a lot of major interviews. And last night he held a town hall from Twitter headquarters in place of the undercard appearance at the undercard debate. In fact, I saw a Facebook meme, a graphic that had Rand on it, and it said, "The revolution will not be televised," which is probably the most clever slogan. I mean, I know the origin of the slogan, but it's the most clever application of a slogan coming out of Rand's campaign the whole campaign season. I thought that was funny. The revolution will not be televised, because Rand's not going to be in the televised debate. So I think he did the best he could do under those circumstances.
Well, I think I missed him. I think that he adds something when he's in the debate. It would have made the whole thing more interesting. He wasn't mentioned except in the undercard when Santorum was about to get the buzzer, and he said, "I know my time's almost up, but I'm going to take a few minutes of Rand Paul's time."
Yeah, that's kind of funny, actually. And when I say I think he did the best he could under the circumstances, I mean, once he made the decision not to participate, then he, I think, did the best he could to get media. But I think if it were me, not that it matters, but if it were me, I think I would have done that undercard debate, given that Christie was in it and he eventually got moved up to the primary debate, the main debate. Likewise for Fiorina, she got moved up. So I think I would have done it, especially I would have been the top person in the undercard debate. I would have had the only original ideas in either debate. So I think I still would have done, and plus I want to spread the ideas. That to me would have been the key thing. What can I do to best spread the ideas? But anyways, I say there are some analysts who say this was a good move by Rand, so am I to dispute that? I'm getting a telephone call. I mean, no one even knows this number.
It's Rand.
Okay. All right. You know what? I'm going to keep that in. I'm not even going to edit that out. I'm going to keep that in. So, what did you think about Rand?
I also want to mention that I think that the undercard debate is always a far more intelligent debate, because neither of these are debates, a far more intelligent forum, because everybody gets to speak their piece at length. And the so-called moderators are actually moderating. They're not part of the show. I think it's too bad he wasn't on there. The only time he was mentioned in the regular debate was at one point some people started shouting about Rand Paul. I couldn't quite understand what they were saying.
What they were saying.
Initially, I thought they were saying Black Lives Matter, and I thought, well, good luck on this crowd. But they were saying something about Rand. But otherwise, you know, he was invisible. I think he would have been far better off being in the undercard debate. He would have gotten a chance to say far more in a more coherent fashion than he would ever be allowed to do in the major debate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we'll have to see what happens.
I must say I didn't like also his decision to say, well, the reason the Republican Party is shutting me out is because it's becoming a old white guy.
Oh, yeah. What an awful. I mean, and that's just a terrible thing to say. And I know that there are some libertarians who say that about the Republican Party, but, you know, fine. They're silly to say it, too. But you don't insult the obvious base of the party by saying we're sick of having you people around. We need to diversify the party. You know, everybody's been saying that since Jack Kemp, and all it does is alienate people.
Also, what about the fact that Ron Paul might be considered
an old white guy,
and he's a pretty great guy. So I wish to goodness he were in this now.
Yeah, and so, see, what I don't get is the people who say that Rand has to say certain things in order to get votes, and of course he has to sign the Tom Cotton warmongering letter. You know, he's got to do that to get votes. Did he have to say that the Republican Party is becoming the old white man party to get votes? How does that get what black person hearing that patronizing remark would say, well, now he's got my vote. So it doesn't attract anybody. That makes no political sense. So the funny thing is that people will say to me, but it happens to be true. Well, how come they'll let Rand say that true statement and let him get away with it, but they won't let him say true statements about foreign policy? I can't understand the Rand Rand followers are one thing, but the Rand can do no wrong people I can't understand at all.
And also he's supposed to think that the solution to this problem is to have a middle-aged white guy in charge.
Yeah, right. Yeah, what
right?
are you
I mean,
after?
Come on.
Right.
I mean, so I thought, by
yeah,
the way,
no, that was a big
when
mistake.
You're 53, college kids don't think of you as another kid. I want to break that to Rand.
All right, let's get into the meat of this. And there was a big confrontation between Trump and Cruz, and that was bound to happen. Of course, as Cruz's poll numbers rose, their friendly relations were bound to go sour. I mean, that's absolutely unavoidable. So we should say a little something about that. In fact, let's start there, and then we'll do a bird's eye overview afterward. I will say I'm going to post on today's show notes page, which would be tomwoods.com/571. I'm going to post the relevant passage from William Blackstone, who would have been the contemporary authority on the subject of what it means to be a natural-born citizen, because that makes it an open and shut case. I used to think that this was not an issue or that Cruz was, in fact, eligible, but you look at Blackstone, who would have been the overriding authority for everybody involved in the drafting of the Constitution and the original understanding, he makes clear that Cruz is actually not eligible. Okay, and Blackstone is the key guy. And then Emmerich de Vattel would have been another one, but the area of his work where he covers this hadn't been translated into English at that time, so maybe you could say, well, Americans didn't know about that, but they certainly did know about Blackstone. And I think this does create a real problem for Cruz. And, you know, I had an episode of this show where I defended Cruz against criticisms of what he had said about the gold standard, because I don't care what person says it. I care about the ideas. So it's not like I'm going out of my way to look for reasons to attack him. But I do think that the arguments against are quite strong. And so Trump's point was that you're putting the party in a very difficult spot, because what if, as Trump said, what if there's even a 1% chance that you're ineligible? There's going to be court cases. You're going to jeopardize the whole party. Why would you do that, basically just to advance your own political ambition? I thought Trump came out very strong in that exchange.
No, I think so. And to the extent that, I mean, obviously Ted is a very competent debater. But I thought he came across sort of as a snake on the whole thing. I mean,
yeah.
He reminded me of some kids that, you know, might be very smart, but you just, you know, you don't like them. So you got to be likable if you're going to, people have to like you if you're going to be president. I thought he lost it on that. And I think, you know, again, you're exactly right. This is a real question. And just the fact that, you know, we're supposed to, when it came to Obama, we're never supposed to think of, you know, a negative thought about him in any sense, of course. But, you know, it's, and I understand there's even some people who even think that Rubio is not a natural born citizen because his parents weren't citizens when he was born.
Now, let's look at the overall question. At the end of this thing, who's up and who's down? I think Carson continues to slide. Every time you ask him, Ben Carson, do you agree with what so-and-so said? It's never yes or no. It's always, well, you know, he always begins with the politician kind of answer of never yes or no. It's always, first of all, this, or we have to bear in mind that. It's never a yes or no. And you would think that the appeal of Carson was that he wasn't a politician. He's a neurosurgeon, so he's going to speak the truth. And yet every time he opened his mouth at the beginning of an answer, it was never to say yes or no. And that drove me crazy.
I thought it was interesting that the poor guy tried to make a joke about his being sleepy when clearly once again last night he was Dr. Narcolepsy. I mean, This guy is entirely out of it. Why he's in the main card debate, I guess it's because of the polls, but I think after Iowa and New Hampshire, he's going to have to go back to Massachusetts or wherever he lives, and Maryland, I guess it is, sorry. And he's just entirely irrelevant. I mean, he's not. It makes you wonder, why the heck is he up there? Why the heck is he running? Who the heck is he? Was he really a neurosurgeon? I mean, it's just, he's not an impressive guy.
No.
And I noticed in the Drudge poll, you know, he came out 1.5% of the people. And I think of the Drudge voters, it's, when I looked at this, it's about 320,000 people. I think of them as being GOP primary voter types, at least of the conservative sort.
Yeah.
And they gave him 1.5%. The only one lower was Bush at a couple of tenths of percent lower. So, no, Carson is irrelevant. And I think it has been irrelevant since the very beginning. I don't think there was ever any there, but now it's certainly tough to hide the fact that that's the case.
Now, I'm calling up Drudge right now. So let's see. So it says the headline is Drudge poll, three left standing. So let me view the results. I assume, so it's Trump, Cruz, and Rubio.
Yes. And of course,
and Rubio is way behind.
Way behind. And I think justly so. I mean, he really, somehow he just is, he's not an impressive guy. He memorized a lot of, I'm sure, stuff that they felt was going to be effective.
Yeah.
And of course, he hates Cruz, and Cruz hates him, and that's all to the good. But, He's not impressive.
And he talks like a politician.
And I have people who I'm not going to give any hints, but people who actually know him and have dealt with him and tell me he's a moron, that he's actually able to memorize a lot of things and he has a very good memory, he's a nice looking guy and all that sort of thing. He wears high heeled shoes, but he's just not impressive intellectually. But on the other hand, either as Obama, so he became president, so maybe that's not a block. But generally, presidents, as evil as they may be, are smart guys. Rubio, he doesn't have it.
Yeah, I think Obama's smarter than Rubio. I really think Rubio is just memorized stuff, and
Tom,
Tom,
we need an IQ test administered by an independent party to find out the truth about that.
Exactly. I will say one thing that Rubio may have memorized that he said last night that I actually was glad somebody said was that I'm tired of all these people who say, I'm going to abolish the IRS and instead have another national tax. And Rubio made the obvious point, who's going to collect that tax? Right? Obviously, I don't care if you call it the IRS, you call it something else, it's still a national tax collection agency.
Of course, Rand does the same thing as Cruz. They're not abolishing the tax collection agency. They may change that. They're going to change the name of it. One thing that I thought was very interesting when Cruz was talking about his horrible VAT flat tax, he was very, and this, of course, this guy's Mr. Goldman Sachs, as we found out that he didn't declare his loan from Goldman Sachs. And of course, his wife is vice president of Goldman Sachs. and member of the CFR and all that sort of thing. And he said that his business tax of 16% would not apply to exports, only to imports. Well, of course, the exporters are all the clients of Goldman Sachs and similar very powerful, politically powerful investment banks. And these, as Murray Rothbard pointed out, these investment banks have been very powerful and very deleterious politically for a very long time. So his whole tax plan is, you know, is a big support for exporters and a punishing of people who import. And who are they importing for? Americans. So it's a punishing, a tax punishing of Americans in order to benefit the clients of Goldman Sachs. And I'm sorry nobody made that point last night, but it struck me because I think his, you know, the Cruz tax plan, like the Rand tax plan, like the Carson tax plan, these all are not exactly in the interests of the American businessman or the American consumer.
I'm going to also link at tomwoods.com/571 to an article on Chinese currency manipulation and what the real truth of that is, because I think there was a lot of demagogic discussion of that. So I'll try and set the record straight on that. I do want to let's see. I mean, there. First of all, I think. I mean, as you say, as you can see from this Drudge poll, nobody else is a factor. Kasich no. didn't have any breakout moments.
Kasich is too boring to be president.
And you know, and my 12-year-old was actually doing homework in the background while I was, you know, miserably watching this. And I don't know why she picked this one person out, but the way Christie talked, such a tough guy talk, she actually looked up from her homework and said, "This guy scares me."
He is scary.
Yeah.
And you know, he's articulate and he's well spoken, but he's just not a factor. And I noticed that his recent, although he was doing relatively well in New Hampshire, I think at eight points at one point, he's going down in the latest polls. I think Christie can just forget it and go back to Bridgegate. He's better go back to New Jersey, because thank goodness he's out of it. And I was especially outraged by his horrible comments about marijuana last night. And horrible, Obama is horrible. He lets the states, just, if they want to legalize marijuana, even though it's illegal, he's okay with that. So, Christie's unsound on the nullification question, Tom.
Yeah,
you're such an expert on.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, as it turns
shocking
out.
Shocking to you, yes.
That's right. Now, the Iowa caucuses are taking place on February 1st. So that's coming right up in just a matter of 2.5 weeks. And there is, according to the schedule that I'm looking at, there's one more debate before then. It's supposed to be January 28th. Now,
yes.
I don't know if this schedule is out of date or not, but so just before the caucuses. So the question is do you think there's any way that Rand would be able to get back into this thing, into the debates, into that key one on the eve of the Iowa caucuses?
I think so, because, you know, this he actually qualified, according to the Fox criteria, with the latest Des Moines Register poll.
Right.
But they didn't release it very unusually, apparently, for these sorts of things until several days after they had the results compiled. So some of the Rand people think this was deliberate. It may very well have been deliberate. Who knows? But yes, he has a very good chance to get into that. And I think it would make it more interesting. And certainly, I mean, I guess Carson will be in there. Bush. By the way, I thought Bush was the... Because I think this every time, I think this was Jeb's funeral last night, because he's the CFR's idea of Mr. President. I mean, he was pretending calm and deliberate and serious and not like these other guys. He was like it's like putting a little bit of water on the street in Florida with the hot sunshine. Whatever he said, whatever he did, however he looked, everything just evaporated and you immediately forgot everything he'd said. I mean, he's just Mr. Forgettable. Trump just got rid of him by saying, you know, we don't need a weak president. Well,
yeah, and that's what we'd have with Jeb. Yeah, that was...
Well, I mean, it's so effective because it's obviously true. So Jeb, I know all the establishment loves him and they would, you know, and of course they're hoping for a contested convention where after the first, sometimes it's one ballot, sometimes it's after the first two ballots, the delegates are released, could be pressured to get together and have, like a Bush-Paul Ryan ticket, unbelievably evil thing like that. But Jeb just hasn't got it. I mean, at least I'm not a fan of the Bush family, to put it mildly. But W had a certain appeal to people.
Yeah, he had Jeb, a kind of a folksy quality.
Jeb. And, of course, he became that because instead of being a Connecticut Yankee like he is, he transformed himself into a Texas guy who would sometimes misspeak. Now, I don't know if this is deliberate on his part. It was certainly deliberate on the part of Dwight Eisenhower, who was in private unbelievably precise. Every sentence, a paragraph. In public, he was slightly bumbling. And some scholars think that that was because he didn't want to answer a question. So who knows what the story, I think with Jeb, excuse me, with George W., if it was indeed intentional, it's just to make himself folksy, not to be like his dad, to seem like a Texan rather than, a Connecticut Yankee.
Well, in fact, there is apparently Eisenhower said in private to somebody, I don't know if it was Dulles or somebody, that don't worry, if they ask me any questions I don't want to answer, I'll just confuse them. Which, you know, sounds like right out of George W. Bush. Right? All right, what I want to do is I do want to also, even though it isn't directly part of the Republican debate, I'd like to say a little something about the situation between Hillary and Bernie Sanders. But before we do that, I'm going to pause for a message about how, with my inbox filled with email, I managed to get my sanity back. So check that out. We'll be right back. All right, everybody, time for honesty right now. How many emails do you have in your inbox right now, unanswered? 100, 1,000, 10,000, 20,000? If you're like me, it's way too many. I had 14,000 unanswered emails, and my 12-year-old said, "You got to do something about this." Well, I found something, and this is what I actually use. I've been bragging to my family about all the progress I've been making. It's called SaneBox. And it keeps your inbox limited to the things you really need to read. And it takes all the trivial stuff and puts it in another folder. And you can help train it to do this just right. Plus, it can take email that you might want to see a week from now when you get back from vacation or tomorrow morning and boomerang it back to you exactly when you're ready to reply to it. It has improved my life dramatically. And you can check it out for free for 2 weeks over at SaneBox.com/Woods. And if you like it, through that link, you'll already be credited $25 toward a subscription. Check it out at SaneBox.com. That's SaneBox.com/Woods. All right, it's time now to talk about Hillary and Bernie Sanders for just a minute because I just feel like doing it. And we've been getting some requests to do these episodes for the Democratic debates. And it just basically comes down to that at some level, the show has to be about me at some level. If there's something I just intensely dislike doing, I just really don't want to do it. So I just don't want to do the Democratic debates. However, Lou, I hope you would be game for when the general election debates take place, and there will be a Democrat, of course, in those. Are you game for continuing to do these
programs? Yeah, are you kidding? Of course.
Yeah, okay. All right, great. So we'll have plenty of time to comment on Democrats at that time. But the question is, which Democrat will we be talking about? Now, the issue has come up that, you know, Sanders, his campaign has been surging and Hillary's been hemorrhaging. But the thing is, Sanders, it just doesn't seem like there's any real chance for him in the long run because I forget who I was talking to who was telling me, gosh, I'm sorry, my memory is so bad lately, but by the time you get to the southern states, Hillary's going to win them all. Oh, yeah, that's right. It's Paul Gottfried. Yeah, Paul Gottfried. I was just talking to him. That's actually not going to air till next week, so I'm taking it away from one of my own episodes. But he was saying that the fact is that all the black political machines in these states, Democratic black political machines, are all in Hillary's corner, and they're going to deliver those votes to Hillary. And the infrastructure just doesn't exist for Sanders in those states. But the thing is, if Sanders makes a strong showing in Iowa and New Hampshire, isn't there any way that that changes things?
Well, maybe, and I think it's becoming clear to people, if only in an inchoate fashion, there's something wrong with Hillary. I don't mean ideologically. I mean, there's something physically wrong. As was speculated at the time when she had her brain clot and after her fall, it was the official explanation. Some people think she had a small stroke. Who knows? She had a growth on her neck. Was it cancer? They said no. Some people think it was, but there's something of course, this is not the lady, poor lady's fault. There's something physically wrong with her. She just doesn't, you know, she's, if I could copy Trump, she's very low energy. I mean, she's just, so is Bill for that matter. They're not the same dominant figures that they used to be. I must say I find it difficult to think that she's going to be the nominee. On the other hand, I certainly don't think Sanders is going to be the nominee. He's just this. He's probably too ethnic for American politics, and we'll just see. But I think he's obviously got a very good chance to beat her in Iowa and New Hampshire.
Isn't it way too late for somebody to jump in at this point, get a whole campaign infrastructure going with the Iowa caucuses not even 3 weeks away?
No, because the Democratic Party, Republican Party has got some of this, but the Democrats especially have what are called superdelegates. And these are people in the Democratic establishment who are delegates to the convention because they're important people in important jobs. So that's a huge number of delegates. So they would, if the party establishment decided that it just can't be Hillary, it's got to be Elizabeth Warren or Joe Biden or I can't see Biden, but I mean, whoever. What actually happens in Iowa and New Hampshire, I know this is going to shock everybody, is entirely irrelevant. Doesn't matter how the people vote. The superdelegates can determine things. So I don't think it's too late at all. On the other hand, you know, maybe she'll be revivified. Some people think that the recent excursion of Chelsea into quite nastily attacking Sanders is an indication of their desperation, because Chelsea's role before has always been, oh, the sweet granddaughter and the sweet daughter with the sweet baby, and you know, showing Hillary as a sweet grandmother and a sweet mother. Talk about a con job. But anyway, that's been the intent. Now she's seen as just an attack dog or attack daughter or something. So a lot of the Democrats apparently think this was a huge mistake, again, showing desperation. I think they are desperate. So I don't think it's by any means, no matter where it is in the calendar, it's not a sure thing for Hillary.
And, of course, even if it is the case that Iowa and New Hampshire aren't the deciding factor— I was also saying Pat Buchanan had a column that I think you ran where he talked about the significance of the New Hampshire primary, that it doesn't always mean that this is the nominee, but if you don't win, it can certainly damage you.
That's right. No, it's true. It's very important in that sense. And if she loses both of those, which is a possibility, I think she's very likely to lose New Hampshire. It's a possibility she'll lose Iowa. Very, very negative, especially since her entire appeal is based on the fact she's inevitable.
Yeah, that's
100% of it. So if it turns out she's not inevitable, then I think she, becomes like the statue of Ozymandias. She's just lying there in the
lone
sand.
The level sand stretched far away. Indeed. Now, there's a funny video that I saw the other day. I posted it. I think it was put out by the Leadership Institute. And it's a guy going around with a poster board with four mansions on it. And he says, all right, one of these houses belongs to, you know, Donald Trump, and one's Rubio, and one's this or that. And I want you to try and pick whose house is whose. And so they say, I think this one must be Trump, and this one must be. And he says, actually, like, these are all houses that people have lived in, and which one has each one lived in? And it turns out the answer is all four of them. The answer is Hillary Clinton. And so this shocks these kids who, for some reason, they're dumb enough to think that Hillary must be a regular working stiff like them. And so, but what, of course, what's so demoralizing about it is that they all say that that would change the way they think about their vote. So, in other words, if you have a big house, I automatically assume that I can't possibly vote for. So they have no philosophy at all. But at the same time, it was kind of funny to watch their jaws drop that they're all Hillary's house.
But maybe, Tom, they're making actually a libertarian point. It's one thing to have beautiful homes that you've earned the money for.
Yeah, right.
It's quite another to have beautiful homes that you've stolen the money for through
politics. Lou, if only these young kids were making fine distinctions like that, I would agree. Maybe I'll put that video also at tomwoods.com/571, because it is kind of funny to see their little naive little reactions to that. All right, let's jump back into the Republicans just for a minute. The New York values question came up because, of course, Trump is a New Yorker and Ted Cruz isn't. Why don't you tell us about that?
Well, of course, Cruz famously said recently that Trump was born in Manhattan and he was an embodiment of New York values, people being concerned about money, about media, being for gay marriage and being for abortion. Was the four things he picked. Turns out that his polling people have been testing this in Iowa, and their test must have shown that it's effective with some people, and so that's why he's brought it up. But I thought Trump, who's becoming a better debater in the classic sense, was very effective in smashing him, talking about, of course, 9/11 and great people rebuilding New York and all that sort of thing, but it made Cruz look bad. And also, how shall I say? This is not a guy who and his family have been unconcerned with money and media. I mean, what is he? Criticizing an entire city because people are interested in money and media, unlike the Franciscan monk Ted Cruz.
Yeah, who's utterly unaffected.
No,
by these things.
Yeah, and I think he did himself damage in the long run, even though he comes in number two, Trump 54%, Cruz 31% on the Drudge poll. I just think he came across as a very unpleasant guy, not at all the kind of guy you'd ever want to have a beer with, whereas you'd love to have a beer with Trump. Everybody would love to have a beer with Trump. I think he did himself some damage. I was reminded of the first time I ever saw Cruz. He was brought in as a speaker to a group of Middle Eastern, a convention of Middle Eastern Christians in Washington. These were people, representatives of communities themselves, a lot of times having suffered ethnic cleansing, religious persecution. There were bishops there, priests, lay people. And he spent his time denouncing them as a bunch of vicious creeps because they didn't like Israel enough.
Yeah.
And I thought, come on. So, of course, Mr. Panderer, I mean, needless to say, but it was a very nasty, vicious performance. Of course, it was articulate. He's always articulate. But he just came across as a snake, and I thought the snake emerged from his hole last night, too.
Yeah, that snake, that was obviously so that he could have a video clip so that everybody would know that where he stood on that and that he was a tough guy and everything. And to do that to these people who were not going out of their way to talk about Zionism or anything. I mean, they were not being impolite. They weren't talking about Israel. They were just saying we're Christians who are suffering in the Middle East. And he takes this as an opportunity to get up and badger and lecture them. I mean, that is extremely poor taste. And it's obviously self-aggrandizing. So it makes you wonder about the guy in general. I mean, I am sometimes, I'm going to be honest, I mean, I'm a human being. I sometimes get caught up in things. And sometimes I'm inclined to sympathize with him because of some of the things he says. And
sure.
Then I remember that particular incident, which speaks volumes about the guy.
And it's true. He said some good stuff about the gold standard. He said some good things against the Fed, although I know that Rand has made an issue of his not showing up to vote for the procedural vote that might have led to a audit the Fed vote. It lost by 5 votes. If Cruz had come, it would have lost by 4 votes. I don't think that, but any more than accusing Rubio of not making his votes, I must say I don't find that an effective issue. But Cruz, he's got a lot of ability. He's got a beautiful family. But I think he's a nasty guy. And they're all, politicians. I don't want to shock everybody. Politicians tend to be very nasty people. Ron Paul is a shining exception to that, but he's very much an exception.
But if it ever came down to Cruz versus Hillary, the nastiness factor would cancel itself out. Right?
That's right. Yeah. Well, they're both very nasty. Of course, that's right.
Yeah,
and Cruz, of course, is much smarter, and especially these days, much faster on his feet. And And of course, the establishment, by the way, and you can tell it from the news coverage, hey, great Cruz, Cruzy, you know, hurt Trump and so forth. They're all clustering around Cruz because although they don't like his style, he is a neocon warmonger. He's in totally supportive of Wall Street and all the worst aspects of crony capitalism. They're happy to have him as versus Trump. So we're going to see a lot of them because all their fair-haired boys have, of course, ended up in the mud where they belong. I think we're going to see a lot more promotion of Cruz. Will the real Ted come out? We'll see.
I don't keep up with anything Bill Kristol says. But I have to say I'm slightly – not curious enough to actually do a Google search, but I'm curious to know what he's been saying about the election because he would have to also hold his nose and jump in for Cruz if he hasn't endorsed Hillary first at this point.
Well, it's true. And, the neo – but again, Cruz is a neocon. He's a terrible warmonger. Rand has been pointing out in an ad that he said he would bomb ISIS until the sand glowed. Well, that's a reference, of course, to nukes. I think Rand is right, a very alarming reference to nukes. Ted Cruz, aside from style questions, fits right into the Weekly Standard. I'm sure there'd be a meeting between Kristol and Cruz, and Kristol would endorse Cruz. And John Bolton and all the neocon thugs would be clustering around him wanting jobs, of course, but they'd probably get jobs in a Cruz administration. On the other hand, just an interesting note on Trump, I know some people who themselves have worked at great remove, not executives for Trump, but I mean worked on his golf courses and that sort of thing. I know other people whose family members have worked on golf courses and hotels of Trump. And universally, they say he's a great guy. That he's easily approachable by employees, that he's always polite, always friendly, always makes a point to speak to everybody, is very generous with bonuses, and all the people that work for him think he's a great boss. So that doesn't mean he'd be anything good in politics, let alone to be a ruler of the world as the U.S. president. But I don't think anybody would say that about Ted Cruz.
Or about so many of them. I mean, we know that we've heard that Bernie Sanders is just horrible to work for. He treats everybody like garbage.
Yes.
Hillary is just legendary. Like, no one's allowed to be in the hallway as she's walking down. It's completely bizarre. I've heard the same thing, by the way, about Bill O'Reilly, that maybe you can be in the hallway, but you can't make eye contact. You know, he's going to go down the hallway and no one can touch him. It's crazy.
You know, by the way, Stalin had that same rule.
Right.
He did.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, we're going to get ready for – I mean, we got another one of these coming up in a couple of weeks. We're going to be right on the verge of the whole thing getting started with the Iowa caucuses. So in a way, I'm looking forward to it because even though they're all crazy, there is still a kind of a bizarre kind of excitement level that comes with it. So I'll look forward to our next conversation in just a couple of weeks.
Tom, at least we have fun with it.
We sure do. We darn well. I don't know if – I mean, no, as I say, the download figures indicate that the listeners do too, but I would like to do this with you over the phone regardless. So anyway, thanks again.
Thank you, Tom. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, a couple things. Remember, we're going to have some valuable resources for you at tomwoods.com/571 that I was mentioning during my conversation with Lou. Secondly, we had a tremendous webinar with Chris Record. If you were there, you know what I'm talking about. At the end, he took a poll and he said, how many of you feel like this was a good use of your time and you learned a lot of practical things and you feel really good about it? 96% yes. It was absolutely great. The guy's got business ideas that just come out his ears, just all the time. Oh, you could do this, you could do that. We were all sitting there in awe watching this guy. And I got emails afterwards saying, well, I was skeptical because anybody who says he's going to help you, you know, financially or earn money or in employment or whatever is probably a scammer. But then I listened to this guy and he is amazing. Well, that's why he's so successful. And he's a friend and he's a Ron Paul guy and it was tremendous. And we raised $2,000 for antiwar.com because so many people showed up to the webinar. So I appreciate you doing that and helping out antiwar.com and I hope learning something along the way. Well, this is like webinar month here at the Tom Woods Show because I got another exclusive webinar for you. It's just for Tom Woods Show listeners. I told you a few weeks ago, probably, maybe even more, about a really great software called Zappable that you can use. It's very easy, drag and drop, to create mobile apps. And these are apps you can use for your own business. And they're also apps that you can sell to local businesses to differentiate themselves. They'd love to have mobile apps, but they feel like they're not Fortune 500 companies, so they how can they afford it? It's an interesting small business idea, because how many app development companies do you think are approaching your local businesses in your town? Of course, none. None of them have that kind of ambition. None of them think to do that. But you can do that. You can create an app for a restaurant and say, hey, you're not a chain restaurant, and yet you can have an app where people can make reservations, where people can order takeout, and this will differentiate you from all the other restaurants. Or here's an app for a bar, and you can send a message to everybody who has this app saying, hey, tonight we're doing a two-for-one drink special. That sort of thing. You can differentiate yourself with an app. So you can sell these apps. So it's a very interesting idea, and Zappable is now closed to the general public. They are not, that's it. They've taken in as many people as they intend to. But they've reopened the door for Tom Woods Show listeners. I had a lot of people saying, I missed your announcement. I didn't get in. I, honest to goodness, I have the email saying, what can I do? So they're having a special webinar just for my listeners. And you can sign up for it, tomwoods.com/zap. We're holding it January 21st. That's a Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Sign up for that webinar, tomwoods.com/zap. Get all your questions answered. You can see how it works. If you hate it, you can get your money back. It's no problem. The webinar, of course, is free, but it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's a great way to get your feet wet with entrepreneurship that has an online basis. So check it out, tomwoods.com/zap. We got another week of great episodes coming up, so I hope you'll subscribe to the show, and I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.